The Dow with a milestone yesterday, crashing through the 40,000 level, then kind of dropped back a little bit. It's just a few points off that open this morning and kind of mixed. But here's an interesting fact. If you had invested money 6 months ago in the Dow Jones, you would have gotten a 14% return. Tech stocks and gold were some of the big gainers. They were 20%. But one commodity stood above all others, copper. If you invested in copper 6 months ago, you would have seen by now a 30% return. Double the Dow Jones, 50% higher than tech stocks or gold. Why? Because it's a critical element as we engage the energy future, whether you're talking about wind turbines or EVs. The question is, can we mine enough of it to satisfy those needs, both in renewables and in transportation? Adam Simon is a professor of Earth Environmental Sciences at the University of Michigan, and he has an answer to that question after researching 120 years of mining history, and he joins us live this morning. Professor Simon, good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So the question is, we want to be all, in the Biden administration, a lot of environmentalists have set the goal of being all new vehicles, EVs, by 2035. Is there enough copper to do that?
There's enough copper, but mining companies are not going to be able to extract it at a fast enough rate to meet the demand in the IRA climate provisions.
And I know one of the key factors contributing to that shortfall is the permitting process for the mining companies. I mean, how do you address that? What's the strategy to address that?
So if you look at copper mining companies around the world, they are mining copper from about 250 locations across six continents. There's no mining in Antarctica. And the average length of time that it takes to get permits to build a mine and start producing copper around the world is 20 years. So that means from the time a mining company says, we want to push the go button and we want to build a mine, whether it's in Michigan or in Brazil, it takes them 20 years to pull it out of the ground. So permitting times are something that really need to be reformed, so that mining companies, they still have to abide by all of the environmental regulations. We certainly want that. But if we want the energy transition to happen quickly, we can't allow 20 years to remain.
Professor, can you give people context about what a normal car needs when it comes to copper and what an electrified car needs?
Yeah, so if you're driving a normal internal combustion engine vehicle, your combustion engine vehicle has somewhere on the order of 20 to 30 pounds of copper. If you are driving a battery electric vehicle, you've got about 200 pounds of copper in that battery electric vehicle. So the amount of copper increases anywhere from 5 to 10 times.
So on the environmental side of things, the green proponents would say, well, we've got to do this because we've got to shrink our carbon footprint. Do we know how much we would exacerbate a carbon footprint by having to mine all that copper in the next 10 years?
Yeah, so if you look at what we call life cycle emissions assessments, meaning what are all of the greenhouse gas emissions embedded in a vehicle, including all of the mining, all of the driving of the vehicle, charging of the battery, all the way through to the end of the life of the vehicle, we know that battery electric vehicles have a much, much, much lower impact on the environment than internal combustion engine vehicles, including the copper mining.
Are there any real actionable steps that policymakers or environmental groups can take to address this shortage, this challenge?
I think there are. I think that if policymakers were to acknowledge the magnitude of the copper that we need in order to manufacture the battery electric vehicles that we're being told they want, I think that if they came out and were more supportive of mining and worked with mining companies to figure out what are the bottlenecks and help mining companies with financing, with permitting, I think that the administrations, you know, in the state of Michigan and also in Washington could do a lot to expedite mining copper.
And it's not just cars. It's the grid itself that needs copper and turbines and a lot of things.
Absolutely. You know, if you're driving around Michigan and you see a large wind turbine on a farm off the side of the highway, that wind turbine has about 12,000 pounds of copper embedded in the wind turbine. And if you see one of the large utility scale solar arrays, you know, DTE has these solar arrays around Southeast Michigan. Every acre, we're talking about several tens of thousands of pounds of copper. So it's not just copper in a battery electric vehicle. We need significant amounts of copper in every wind turbine, in solar panels, and then we also need copper to upgrade the grid. You know, as everybody drives a battery electric vehicle and, you know, we come home and we plug in at the end of the day, we need extra copper to increase the amount of electricity that DTE and other utilities are pushing out for us to recharge our batteries.
So there are some in the automotive industry, Akio Toyota being the most notable, excuse me, who have said, look, if we moderate our expectations here, we can deliver and shrink the carbon footprint of the transportation sector hugely. If we just, instead of saying we must have BEVs, we go with plug-ins. Would that reduce our demand for copper? Which, by the way, as I pointed out, isn't getting any cheaper. It's up 30% in 6 months.
No, and I'm sure copper mining companies are happy about that price increase. So to your point, we make this recommendation in our paper, and what we show is that the amount of copper needed to transition our vehicle fleets to hybrid vehicles is considerably less than the amount we need for battery electric. And again, if you look at the life cycle emissions of, you know, I'll use a couple of examples here that we focused on. If you compare, for example, the Toyota Prius with the Tesla Model Y, the life cycle emissions of the Prius are slightly less than the life cycle emissions of the Tesla Model Y, even if you plug your Tesla into a 100% renewable grid.
So why don't, Adam, why don't they understand that in the green energy lobby? They're smart people. They've crunched the numbers too, haven't they?
I can't speak for them.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Are they listening to you?
I think they're listening, but they're slow to listen. You know, I think what's happening is everybody who is advocating for the energy transition has their heart in the right place, myself included. I think that they're working towards a common goal to reduce the impact that humans have on the environment. And I think all of us want that. But now we're faced with what do we do to actually reduce our impact? And so we're providing what we think are realistic solutions. And a lot of times choosing the realistic solution is hard.
Can there be, you know, we've heard you talk about the copper, the inability to bring this copper to market quickly enough. We heard the same thing about oil and gas. Then they discovered the Bakken reserves. Then they discovered new ways of fracking to get more oil out of the reserves we have. Might we see the same kind of technological breakthrough with copper that will make this attainable?
We might, but we shouldn't count on that. You know, what's happening in the copper mining industry now is every copper mining company is trying to figure out how do we squeeze more copper out of the rock that we're pulling out of the ground. How do we squeeze copper out of what we historically thought of as waste rock? And they're putting a lot of money into R&D, and they're hiring really smart people using AI and machine learning and trying every possible angle. Companies, for example, Freeport-McMoRan, which is one of the world's top three copper producers, it's a U.S.-based company out of Arizona. Freeport has announced that they are going to start extracting copper from historic waste piles, but the total amount of copper that they're going to be able to extract is equal to about one new copper mine per year. So that'll have an impact, but it's a really small impact.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool that you're recycling.
Yeah, that part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And mining companies are aware of that. The other thing that we know is likely to improve are recycling rates. So if you look globally at how much copper we recycle, it's only about 30 to 35%. And if we look at historic recycling rates, you know, going back decades, if we assume that recycling rates will continue to improve, get better year over year out over the next several decades, recycling of copper will also only provide a small amount of the total copper that we need.
Well, we need to adjust our expectations, Adam Simon. We appreciate your scholarship and your research into this.
Well, thank you very much.
Adam Simon, professor of earth and environmental sciences. And if you're in the auto business, you might want to grab that podcast off of WJR.com and send it to some of your friends on the environmental side to say, hey, let's have
a discussion
about how to do this responsibly, effectively, and actually attainably. So the question is, now that the Dow has crashed through the 40,000 barrier, what does it mean to the market going forward? And what does it say about our economy in the future? Where should you be investing other than copper? That's next on JR Morning at 6:49.